Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run. It's Monday and we should all be full of energy. And, you know, what's that verbosity word that people like to use? Rejuvenated.
No, and that's you and verbosity-ness.
Look, I double checked on his verbosity. Still doing just fine. And then when that guy gets out of that holding cell, he's coming straight to this studio.
Almond, we're going to be so beaten up.
I know. So, welcome back from a trip I admire but could not have. And so I was just here the whole week, keeping, you know, making sure that our promise of a drive time show does not, it's not stalled. So,
welcome back.
Not in any way.
Definitely not.
Yeah, so... He's back, and as usual, at the Drive Time Show, we are here, and this is Home Run on Eagle FM. At the time is 26 minutes left to the hour of 5. And as always, we have yet another exciting topic in store for you today. So wherever it is you are tuned in, thank you for picking Eagle FM this wonderful afternoon.
So, I'd also like to thank the Eagle FM listeners out there specifically. Bumped into a few of you guys on said particular excursion last week. They didn't recognize me, but they actually liked some of the, you know, other colleagues that have their particular daily shows here with us. So, once again, thank you. Say just a thank you there to, you know, bumping into some of the most valued, listeners out there. All of you are most valued. Don't worry, dear listeners. So, once again, it was, nice meeting some of you and, thank you for listening to us and still continue to do so. So yeah, being back now, obviously for a week, don't worry. I wasn't kidnapped or anything. It was just sort of like a working situation.
Well, technically, Eagle FM kidnapped you and then took you to the north. More like on a tour,
on a cultural
observation.
Yeah, cultural tourism observation situation.
So, welcome back, and let's now talk about the Tokyo International Conference on African Development, aka TICAD. Now,
it's not TICAD. TICAD.
Not ticket.
These guys.
No. And, just a quick reminder for those of you that, for some reason, forgot, whatever reason, tomorrow is Heroes Day and it's taking place in the Zambezi region, you know.
France's region.
Yeah, France region and Abigail's region and Sangwasa's region. The rest will keep the rest for Sunday.
I don't know why you had to mention the minister's name there.
The comedy world is having we're having a time of our life.
Yeah, it's like nuclear fallout situation. you guys have ammunition, yo.
The jokes just keep writing themselves.
You guys have ammo.
At every 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, last week, TICAD, which is basically an Africa-Japan developmental collabo. They had their annual come together in in Osaka, Japan. Last week,
and Osaka, Yokohama.
Yokohama.
What was happening in Osaka?
The two events. Yeah, the two events.
Precursor, okay. Yeah. No, then you're right.
The textile one. The textile one took place in Osaka. That's the one that keep going back to. Now this one took place in Yokohama, where they met to give each other, updates on it's not updates really as much as they are assurances that the collabo is still as strong as it was when it was formed a couple of years. How old is it? Isn't it like about 10 years old now?
Who? TICAD.
Yeah, TICAD.
TICAD says it's from 1990. They keep referencing 1993.
Like it's that old.
So it's 32 years.
Jeez.
You should have seen your expression now.
32. Every time I come across a party in an organization or any, especially the intergovernmental one that we are part of, and I look at it, and I'm like, when did we even join this? And then you actually come to realize, we looked at, was it with you when I was talking about the EU Africa, you know, joint vision 2030?
Wasn't that the discussion that I couldn't join last week, Amut?
Oh, yeah.
With the report.
With the report. That one. So we have, developmental agreement. We with the EU, we have a developmental agreement. You know, the Indian Prime Minister is here, so you have all these assurances, being exchanged on the top level of governments of both countries.
Yeah.
And we had the Samoa. Now we are also a party to that, and now we're talking about TICAD, which this one is not really. It's not Namibia and Japan developmental collab. This is Africa, a whole continent, and Japan. A country that can fit in
the whole of Namibia. It can at least take 50%, or at least 70% in terms of surface area
of Namibia.
At least
Namibia.
Now, you don't want to look like France that fits into half of Namibia, or Luxembourg that is someone's farm in Namibia.
Yeah, Luxembourg can fit in your location. Forget Namibia.
Yeah.
Now when we look at all this, last week, I think that was Thursday. Yeah, last week, Thursday, I went through, like the two events that preceded, that preceded, the ticket discussion. Now, one took place, earlier, I think one in June, one in April.
Yeah.
I think it was the second one. And because I remember that as, the first or the second one? I remember it's the third paragraph, the last line where it was pointed out that, this is more of a, laying the stage for the ticket that's coming later on, which is what we witnessed last week, of which a lot of countries and their representatives, some countries, presidents themselves attended the event.
Yeah.
And some like Namibia, for example, who is just saying the prime minister. And, interesting enough, one of the funniest first thing that came out of that event was, the Nigerian, Nigerian booth that went viral for being empty in the middle of the, ticket. And every booth had people showcasing what their, what their country can produce and contribute to these agreements or this partnership. The one for Nigeria. That video went super viral, like really fast, that it was wildly empty. Nigerians went bananas that all this, because Tinubu was there.
Mm.
Yeah. So everyone was now asking, okay, why is this booth empty? The president and the delegates, we understand the president is attending like the discussion aspect of things.
Yeah.
He can't hold discussions, high stake engagements and then attend to the booth all at the same time.
It's not his job to attend to the booth.
That'd be funny looking at Tinubu there going, man.
No.
Okay, now coming back to home run.
But I know many of the Nigerians, like I know fellow Namibians here.
Yeah.
We would have been asking questions of, yeah, now couldn't you go and sort out our booth there?
No way.
Guys, it's not in that person's job description. It's not the president's job description.
I have a lot of things to say, but anyway. Yeah, now, so, they say, obviously, a lot of questions were asked, and then but one of the questions that was mostly asked was that, the delegates, the people whose role was to do that.
Yeah.
Did they travel with the president, or did they, did they cut out last minute because of some travel budgetary issues, maybe? Now, all those questions, basically, I didn't follow it enough to make sure that, to see if the questions were answered. I'm like, okay, you know what? That's up to them. So the thing is, that's one thing I found basically fascinating from earlier on in the discussion of ticket, and where you have like where you have the discussions going on, where you have the prime ministers and president, basically the ones that, you know, policymakers that are just looking at, okay, now for the two peoples, for the people from these two regions to interact, especially on a commercial level, because at the end of the day, we, you know, trade is, you know, is the goal that we'd like to achieve.
Mm.
You have your prime ministers and presidents, having discussions there about, how are we going to create this environment, that will let our people come together and basically, you know, come together in cohesion to do business, or be it tourism or, tourism and all those things. The booths are supposed to be open to showcase the promise that the prime minister or the president is making there.
Yeah.
Before, you know, if I'm a prime minister or a representative, for example, and I'm telling the people at the podium that Namibia is able to produce this and this and this textile, for example, we should have at least a sample or two of the textile so that I can just give reference that, okay, you know what, in between the breaks, if you can just swing by the booth, you'll see what I'm talking about.
Mm.
Yeah, so... But before continue, commercial.
With either a non-alcoholic Heineken, Savannah, Vintook Original, or Vintook Lemon, let's cheers to connecting, to moments shared and good vibes, anytime, anywhere. Grab one of our great tasting non-alcoholic beers or ciders. Easy to connect, easy to enjoy. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Now, welcome back. We are still on Home Run. We are still on Eagle FM, and we're still talking about TICAT. Now, if you just joined us, that's short for Tokyo International Conference on African Development. You have to say we're very good at coming up with these abbreviations. Yeah, so...
Well, not us. It's someone else, Mos. The thing says... The name says it's for us.
I know.
Elmud, every time, this is like a reality slap that hits us Africans, or it hits you and me every time when we do these kinds of shows.
Yeah.
Where we look at who's got a plan for Africa. Because we need to understand what is Africa's plan, and how Africa's plan fits into the other people's plans.
Yeah.
Remember when you did the European, African, that report about the pillars?
Joint Vision 2030.
Yeah, the thing of last week. Nah? Mm. Remember that report that I sent you and what it literally spoke about there. Now, you could literally see, if you have to ask yourself, the EU and AU are two clusters of countries.
Yeah.
But the one has already advanced at such levels. They have a single economy, a single currency, a central bank. They've got a single constitutional scenario, meaning the European Court of Human Rights,
yeah.
The ECHR.
Yeah.
They have integrated transport systems. They have integrated trade systems. They have, it's just the other scenario in terms of how each country regulates its debt scenario, its own debts, public debt systems. Yeah. Not its private, debt scenarios, its public debt scenarios. Which means that if the country takes on too much debt, it can end very quickly in an aspect of austerity. Now, I have a suspicion Namibia has been through austerity. This could probably be since 2016 heading this way into, even past the COVID scenario.
Yeah.
The COVID scenario obviously just makes it worse.
Yeah, but what is austerity for those of us that went to Umukuru Development Community High School?
Anyway, I know. So austerity is when the government slashes spending on public projects.
Yeah.
So when you and I went through the midterm expenditure framework,
yeah.
The new page, the new thing that was 1,000 pages.
Yeah.
From the 500 of yeah. last year's yeah. one. Both scenarios is literally when the government spends on public services. And when the government, for example, like in this new budget, financial budget for the year, for the government, that's not our government, where MASAC is now that super ministry because Ministry of Health is most obviously still separate.
Yeah.
You've got these two human development ministries that sit separate from each other, but they know they've got to play significant roles.
Yeah.
In terms of what that EU-AU scenario is and this AU-Japan scenario is in terms of, you know, developing each or helping to develop the African communities
because
and societies.
Because let's face it, the Japan is already there.
No, I'll still get there. I'll still get there. Don't worry, I'll still get there. So when you look at those two scenarios, those two agreements, and you look at, because I've now, you know, the declaration just before the show in terms of also just understanding what they're saying in the declaration.
Yeah.
So the Japanese have illustrated to the AU guys, there are four pillars we've got to work on. First, the first pillar they start off from, economy. That sounds very close to the Marshall Plan that Japan also adopted. Helmut, there's a thing that I kept seeing on YouTube when I look at, you know, way of life in Japan.
Yeah.
Why do they have such, Japan has got a name, Japan has got names for top companies where, you know, working environment is okay and companies that working environment is not so good.
Oh.
Now the not so good ones are known as the black companies. Not anything racist. The reference to black is just that your labor contract says 8 to 5. But you find yourself working from 6 to 10 or 6 to 12 every day on a daily basis. And you literally go home at night. You have no life. Saturdays, Sundays, you are just sleeping and staying indoors because you've got to rejuvenate every weekend. So with the Marshall Plan that the Americans rolled out in the 1940s after the Second World War,
yeah.
Japan was part of it, part of the Marshall Plan, the rebuilding of Japan. And the rebuilding of Germany. In that scenario, the Japanese literally said, in terms of gaining back their, you know, or reaching economic, what can I say? Economic, high levels of economic growth. There's supposedly, for many people that, many foreigners that work in Japan, they say it's an unwritten rule, but you are actually coached by it, by the Japanese HRs there, is that countries first, then the economy, then whatever, and then comes your family, and then comes... So already you are being indoctrinated through company culture or corporate culture. This is how you've got to approach things. When I went through this declaration, that is on the AU website, from the sticker thing, it was literally written, Helmut, the day... TICAD ended last week on Friday.
Yeah.
22.
Yeah.
When I come to the first pillar, they start with the economy. Then they start with society. And then I realize, why does this look like the Japanese system of saying, put your economy first before anything else? Peace and stability can probably, peace and stability will be the means by which we achieve the conducive environment, but economy comes first.
But now, social-wise, I think social-wise, it's a very good, if you look at it developmental-wise,
yeah.
It's a very good plan. It's a very good approach. But when you look at it, for the problem that these countries like Japan and South Korea, among other developed countries, are facing now, is that now they literally have to incentivize people that have been, that they've been telling for decades that you must think of you last.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now they have to incentivize them for them to have families because that's where the future workforce of the economy depends on.
Now here's the thing there. anyone else, if you speak to a Namibian, like, what was it? The AI discussion. Was it the AI discussion? Of 2 weeks back. Not this week. No, 3 weeks back.
Okay.
Remember when
the one for AI readiness.
Yeah, the AI readiness. Yeah. Remember I interviewed, what's the lady's name from the Media Trust, Zoe Titus. And I asked her in terms of when you look at the AI readiness that you and I covered, that particular discussion, she cited in terms of the AI readiness scenario, Namibia should have taken, stock of the rights-based dimension, meaning you protect our rights digitally, or you bring in legislation to protect our rights digitally, like you would protect my rights in the physical real world. For example, you've got the police force there. If I know get mugged here outside or robbed,
yeah,
I can find some aspect of justice by reporting a case,
yeah,
and the police follow up and the police investigate and apprehend, charge, go through the whole process. But I understand the case scenario there. And I understand that the reason as to why the Japanese started off with the aspect of economy first. Get the one mechanism in your country that generates the biggest benefit for all. Meaning, get your economy in order.
It's kind of difficult to sort of like juggle the two, right? Because now, first of all, to...
Well, if you go to a country like Mauritania,
yeah,
where they still practice slavery, yeah, how then do you encourage the Mauritanian government,
yeah,
to, in a sense, extend universal human rights across the board to people, to everyone, every citizen in Mauritania?
Yeah, but I still don't understand that. I mean, is that like a cultural thing?
It is a cultural thing.
So it's they basically taken what's this thing in India mostly?
The caste system.
Yeah, they basically taken the caste system and taken it to a whole diabolical another level.
Yeah, I mean,
so your significance in society depends on which tribe you are born in.
Your significance in society is based literally on a whim, meaning it's either you are lucky or unlucky. Meaning the luck being that you are not born in a specific caste. The unlucky part is that you are born in a certain particular caste that is looked down upon. And that is where certain parts of the world...
Okay, but just do an experiment. Take three different people, or more like... take 30 different people, for example, from 10 from each caste.
Mm.
And take them to a country where that system doesn't exist. Take them to Europe. Heck, bring them to Namibia and put them through school. You realize that you will find dumb people and smart people and good people and idiots in every tribe and every race.
Everywhere, across the country, across the world.
Yeah, across the world.
Yeah, you will.
But now, the fact that you have a system that's maintained by a government that
recognize
that belief that if you are born from one, you know, one tribe or one religion, for example, then you are either inherently bad or inherently good or inherently lazy. It's very, I don't know, 1800s European perspective of pretty much everyone that was in blue eyes and blonde hair.
It's technically medieval. You've got to go
very medieval.
You've got to even go back further
back to 1500s.
Yeah, so it's super medieval, and that would in most cases put it ahead or before any aspect of colonialism in certain scenarios.
Yeah.
Now, why I cited this particular discussion? Because, for example, there is another report, the other report that I shared with you, the one coming from TICAD itself about, you know, what were they doing on the continent? The impacts. Yeah. You remember the other report? The
impact
other
report, yeah.
Yeah. The impact scenario, for example, when you come to a country like South Sudan, ne? Where you've got the president, the vice president, and the prime minister, all three of those guys don't like each other. All three of those guys, yes, dear listeners, you can go look this up. We are not making fairy tales up here on Eagle FM. I was even surprised last year when I heard that every time when Antonio Guterres in the UN steps up at the UN General Assembly and says, the situation in South Sudan is reaching critical levels. Why is it reaching critical levels again? I thought they are quiet. I thought they are peaceful. Well, it's every time that the vice president becomes angry at the president, and then they both go and call up literally their personal armies. So the political leaders are also warlords in that scenario.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Do you know what's the worst part of that scenario, Helmut? Remember when you gave me that example of the gang of, was it 17 boys that were publicly executed in DRC?
No, I think those guys were somewhere in 60 or 70. They were a lot.
Those teenage boys. Yeah. They were a lot. Who literally grew up in a zone of warfare, fighting, bloodshed, being violent.
That's all they knew.
That's all they knew. And then they turned to a life of crime.
Yeah.
They took their skills.
It's about exposure, obviously. That's what they have been exposed to growing up.
Yeah. So. And they obviously thought that the law didn't exist in certain parts of Eastern DRC. And obviously the DRC police obviously got hold of them and the judicial system. Tikkat reports in that impact report of it that for the first time they had a cash for work initiative in South Sudan for youth and women. Let me repeat that again. The first time they introduced a cash for work. Break after this, guys.
It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
The best connections and moments are worth remembering, don't you think? Grab one of our great-tasting non-alcoholic drinks, Heineken, Savannah, Windhoek Original, or Windhoek Lemon, anytime, anywhere. Easy to connect, easy to enjoy. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news?
Welcome back from that extended break. So, Kish.
First time that they had, Helmut. Cash for work initiative. Now, where have you heard of something like that that works automatically in Namibia? No. Let me rephrase that. Where have you heard something similar working automatically on the continent? Namibia, South Africa.
For work.
That means, Hamoud, the socioeconomic situation in South Sudan, from that small paragraph in that impact report, it's almost a 31-page report, That small paragraph next to South Sudan, because remember, I still said, you know, is South Sudan the only destabilized zone or non-stable zone in Eastern Africa? Because we know about Sudan to the north of it.
Yeah.
But it obviously was where, Tikkad's agency, development agency, JICA, was present where they were operating in. So there's this technically.
In Sudan.
Yeah. JICA is the agency that exists as a result of Tikkad. So Namibia also has a JICA office here.
No, I did not know that.
Oh, okay, I know that. No, I actually bumped into the lady that I'm Facebook friends with and asked for her business card because, you know, in future I'd like to have a small interview with her boss in terms of, you know, how do we fit into this declaration situation?
Yeah.
What would Namibia need that they as the Japanese, but I know that he would probably have to speak to his other boss, which is the Japanese ambassador here behind us.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've already seen like five moves ahead in terms of how long that situation would take. But still, yeah. The South Sudan situation gives me insight or gives any reader insight in terms of this technically means that South Sudan does not have an economy. If you have to bring in an initiative as the government of Japan and its affiliate agencies to introduce paying people for work that they do, this technically means, Helmut, that South Sudan does not have a constitution that recognizes that people should not work for free. Because I know in our constitution it says it outrightly and very categorically clear. Okay, you do not work for free.
Why am I even working? I don't think that's even called a job.
Yeah, that's not called a job.
No, that's not a job. That's voluntary work. There's a
that's
difference.
Not even voluntary, bro. That either means...
It's more like involuntary work. Because means, for one, you don't want to do it.
It either means that there's probably slavery there. There's probably...
Okay, but there's some kind of compensation.
Servitude there. There's probably servitude there.
Again, we're back to medieval.
Helmut, they're selling oil.
Oh, so
you know
no
that South Sudan is oil.
Yeah.
It's the reason as to why South Sudan split from Sudan.
If they got their independence when it was 2011?
They're there about 2013-ish. You know they've got oil. It really doesn't make sense. That no, ultimately yeah. means the oil they've been selling has only stopped somewhere, meaning, once again, trickle-down economics does not work.
Actually proves itself. Capitalism proves, again, one, for the millionth time, trickle-down economics
does not work.
Works on paper.
Yeah. Sounds good on paper.
Oh, it sounds really good on paper.
Wonderful idea.
Wonderful idea. But in actual reality, what you have written on paper forgets one fundamental thing about human beings. Greed.
Yes.
Yep.
Greed. So, the pillars in the AU TICAD, AU Japan declaration outlines a picture primarily of that, you know, they wish to achieve certain things first. So, how it flows, economy first, then society, then peace and stability, and then the way forward is the fourth scenario, meaning conclusion or recommendation or as it says, way forward scenario of this declaration. However, I have a slightly annoying aspect to contend with. I'll partner it up to what our Prime Minister said, Helmut,
yeah.
Because I recognize the same thing that stems through from the Commonwealth picture, the France picture, the Commonwealth obviously in the reference to the UK,
yeah,
and the UK's closest ties with certain African countries versus that the UK was technically almost everywhere on the African continent,
yeah,
even after the First World War. The French bilateral relations. And obviously the bilateral relations that come through from, what's the country's name? From Japan. These three economies, Helmut, are, okay, the first two, the French and the British, you know, they are there. The downside is that when they speak about Africa, they only speak from a Nigerian, a Kenyan, and a South African perspective in the British scenario. Meaning, I'm talking about the exposure that people out there get of Africa. So, if they hear Africa, they hear Nigerian issues. If they hear Africa in Britain, they hear Kenyan issues. If they hear Africa, they hear South African issues. They don't even hear Zimbabwean issues.
Yeah,
the only African country that the UK has sanctioned. They don't even hear Zimbabwean issues. I'm sorry, Zimbabwe. I know fellow Zimbabweans, you know, you guys would have loved to be front and center, but unfortunately they don't even speak about you guys. If they do speak about you, it's either in the negative.
It's usually, it's most likely to start with Robert Mugabe did or Robert Mugabe said.
Or they wish to somehow target the ruling party in Zimbabwe, which is ZANU-PF. So it's either in that line. If it comes to the French perspective of Africa, it's always Mali. It's always Ivory Coast. It's always Cameroon. So you would hear Africa's issues from a Malian perspective only. So now the whole Africa, according to the French, of what happens in Mali is now the issue. now that you get into the Japanese relationship with Africa, those first two events that you mentioned at the start, Helmut.
Yeah.
The
Converse Africa.
Yeah, the Converse Africa, the March or April, and the June engagements. The June engagement was about universities working together, closer ties between African universities and Japanese universities.
Yeah.
And the first one was about developing Africa's textile industry.
That's the second one.
Is that the second one?
Yeah, the second one is textile. The first one was
Collabo.
Yeah. Education, research, and development.
Now, I'm a huge proponent of the second one, the textile industry development scenario.
Yeah.
But guess what, fellow Namibians? Where do these TCAD guys go? Guess where they go of all the 54 countries on this continent? They go only to Kenya. So now Kenyan textile is the whole of Africa.
It's representing Africa.
Man.
You know what's my favorite part?
You know, I didn't even want to read that document even further. Because I was like, these guys are just talking about Kenyan stuff.
Hey, no, look, I was happy for us. By us, I mean Africa. Because,
they were making Japanese kimonos with Kenyan designs.
Exactly. You see that collab? Nah, that's how you bring together two people from different...
Being bought in Japan.
Nice doing kung fu.
But you're not wearing your own kimono.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what I actually discovered right now, Amut? If we look at that scenario, I'm zooming now in an economic sense. Né? On the way here to the office, so my sister left a weird parcel just in close proximity to where I could see it. And I went and looked at the thing because I've been seeing this thing for like 15 years lying there on the same spot. Yes, I know, I'm like that. Sometimes I just pick the thing up and put it down, never really study it, never really taking cognizance or stock of what I had in my hand.
You and me both.
So I look at it closer, Helmut, because I read the textile, the Converse Africa textile scenario.
Yeah.
Where they were using these materials sourced from Kenya, designed in Japan and manufactured in Japan, Japanese kimonos. Yeah. Obviously, it looks like a whole fashion show hoo-ha situation.
Oh, yeah, it was a fashion show.
And then I look at this thing that's here literally in my house. And I see this thing that the South Africans had for like 15 years. Because my mom collected these things. So what the South Africans did, Helmut, with their magazines. And each magazine had a different genre. Not a genre, a different audience or readership that it cultivated. This magazine, specific magazine, I forgot its name because the name was pretty small versus the thing that they put for free into the magazine. So you'd be buying the magazine for like $30, $30 Namibian.
Yeah.
In the magazine, you would have a weekly design of women or children's clothing.
Design.
Helmut, a free design. Helmut, let me say it again. Do you know that my mom technically, okay, you don't know, but my mom technically collected something like 12 to 15 of these things. Winter clothes, raincoat, children's clothes, boys, girls, but it's predominantly women and children, you know, in that scenario. Free designs. To make clothes. A free design. So what you do...
A free as in it's not copywritten.
A free design is in the sense of that it's a complimentary gift for you being a loyal customer to the publication that used to carry these things. So you would buy the thing and you would get this in it. I used to buy a specific magazine from that's also... That technically comes from the US, but it had a branch in South Africa known as PC Gamer. And they would have free software on a disc. Every edition would have free software for every month. And then you would get things like your free VLC, your free antivirus software download. They would put it on this disc for you. And you could just
complimentary.
Download. You could just download because it's free software that you get. Instead of you now having to surf
the internet
looking for things, these guys just went and let's put all this on. So... I asked my sister, what are these things? She says, okay, this is when you have the material already. You take this design out. It's it looks like a plan, you know, like a building blueprint plan. You take this blueprint out. You put it on the material and you just cut along the lines.
And make your own outfit out of it.
And make your own garments and outfit out of it. I said, how fascinating it is that the South Africans had this for free. You didn't have to go to Tokyo. You didn't have to fly to Yokohama. You don't have to be part of a international platform of achieving the South Africans. All you had to do was pay 30 Namibian dollars every month reading a magazine. And you would get a free business design to a product. If you were a fashion designer now in Namibia, you could have had free designs. You didn't have to think up anything new.
You know, I think the approach here is a very fascinating one, you know, especially when it comes to, especially when it came to the textile discussion.
Yeah.
This is where you saw that, you know, you are seeing diplomacy in everything. You are seeing, you are seeing the statement, how do we get our people to get along in everything? Because getting African material to make Japanese outfit or out of it, I was like, okay, this is a very interesting collabo and stuff. But again, you are seeing that, you know, it's basically more of a motivation and I don't want to use the word bring together, but that's basically what they are trying to do.
You save prices on groceries are still the best in town. 4 kilos of real good frozen mixed chicken portions, just 189.99 Namibian dollars. 84 grams of Robertson's chicken spice, just 13.99 Namibian dollars. Knorr soup of all variants, just 5.99 Namibian dollars each. 700 milliliter Wellington's tomato sauce, just 25.99 Namibian dollars. 2 liters of Wright brand sunflower oil, just 68.99 Namibian dollars. And 2 kilogram bag of Pasta King elbow pasta, just 44.99 Namibian dollars. Save big at You Save.
The best connections and moments are worth remembering, don't you think? Grab one of our great-tasting non-alcoholic drinks, Heineken, Savannah, Vintuk Original, or Vintuk Lemon, anytime, anywhere. Easy to connect, easy to enjoy. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, 17 minutes past the hour of 5. So I think this is where, you know, this is where you are seeing sort of like, how do I put this? It's like your parents and your friends' parents trying to find a common ground that they can work together because their kids are friends. So you see them, you see them... making up stuff so that they can basically get along for the sake of you too.
Or it's a scenario of, a prearranged marriage being arranged.
I didn't want to take it that far, but
you had to take it that far. Because literally all these things look like marriage.
Arranged marriage.
Look like arranged marriage scenarios. So yeah, when I mentioned the discussion of those free clothing designs.
Yeah.
This obviously takes us back to looking at the things that Africa lacks, right? In a Namibian context, what do we lack? We lack as Namibia soft industries. Not soft industries as in software computerized or computer industries, dear listeners. Soft industries is a discussion Herman and I did last year in 2024. It's we lack things of making our own clothing, own shoes, even though it is in the Namibia Correctional Services. They have it already.
Yeah.
It's just they only make one design there. It's orange. It's a jumpsuit. And it's not made for you. You and me.
If you put one on, the police then might stop, and go like,
whoop, whoop. What are you doing here?
When you're supposed to be somewhere.
Confined.
Yeah.
You know? Just, you know.
Okay, now we're just being mean.
So, we have such an aspect in our economy, right? But in the broader economy, the thing just doesn't seem to take off. Because remember, the empty garment factory standing in Nkurunkuru.
Yeah.
The somewhat, whether we don't know, garment facility in Kitmanswip, that was also outlined by that standing committee. And then we've got the tannery situation in Ondangwa that specifically, you know, has the volunteer workforce that owns the input materials in the factory, which is still one of the best things I've ever heard in my life.
I know. Immortal leather.
That has been there for a year.
Still
2 years. Still fresh.
Dynamic.
But no one knows whose leather is in, what's the tank? The septic tank.
Yeah.
No one knows whose leather is in the septic tank.
The one that's outside. Now that is ours.
That's ours.
The one in the tank, we have no clue.
You know what?
We volunteered to protect it, but for that, doesn't that like make you terrible at your job? Because the question
would have been, how did it get there in the first place?
So. This is the reason why you and I will never make parliament. Look,
they can have us there as the speaker, you know. We'll be enforcing rules.
You're gonna get beaten.
We'll be enforcing rules that don't exist. And then we'll be beaten afterwards.
Yeah. Because we'll be like, this one here is yours. Yes, sir. The one in the tank is not yours. Huh. Interesting.
How did it come that we have volunteer labor?
No, first of all, what's your job here to protect the area?
I'm volunteering.
How did that end up in there?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if it's your protecting, you should know. Because if you don't know how it got in there, that's just as scary as you knowing how it got in there.
Or even you volunteering to work there. But anyway.
Man, I love our country.
So we've got the scenarios. This is what Namibia needs. Because clearly, I see the product work. I've given you another example of a product that works. I see the product working every day in the Namibian economy. I've spoken about the initiative that Woolworths runs, where they support South African local producers with lovely big billboards saying, buy South African, I'm standing in Namibia. Huh. Really? You're promoting local South African content in Namibia.
Now, when it comes to textile supporting of local industry, right? I'm more one of those people that, that was, born in a wrong financial setting. I'm not supposed to be broke. I think I'm supposed to be rich. Now, the thing is, look, I like custom-made clothes. So, I go to this local tailoring guys. So there's this dashiki type of shirt that I had to custom make. Yeah. So I just saw it on the internet. So I just printed out the picture, took it to the ladies. I did the same thing in 2017 when I was in Zambia. I just found these two guys with their sewing machines and stuff. Just gave them a picture and they did an amazing job. Mm.
Still have it?
I still have it.
Yeah. No, yeah. Not the picture, the item.
The picture. As soon as I got the shirt, I threw it away.
Okay.
Now, the thing is, when you just ask for, one thing I've noticed for both was that, I just needed a shirt. Yeah, with the embroidery on the, with the embroidery, like on the chest, going, like converging as it goes down.
Mm.
That was, $1,200.
Mm. Namibian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, when it comes to t-shirts and t-shirts, t-shirts are most likely going to range somewhere in the range of, $300 to $400.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, for t-shirts, now that I know for sure, because that was like about a month or two ago. Now, the first question I started asking myself was like, by God, this expensive. And then I found myself in one of the shoe stores that we frequent. Oh man, the prices hardly, man, nah, they're not expensive. Nah.
Those prices in those shoe stores.
Yeah.
Have got salaries, water, electricity, rent in it. And even, what's the other one's name? There's another thing I keep forgetting. Internet.
Yes. So it's a stack of things that
you're looking. A stack of prices to make up the price. There is a base price that makes profit for the business.
Yeah.
But the price increase is just they're marking up to take into consideration all the overheads that you would see in front of yourself.
Yeah. Including the rent they have to pay for the place.
The water and electricity. So if they find themselves, for example, like in a Grove Mall, it could be close to 50,000 a month. They've probably got like 5 or 6 people on the floor.
Yeah.
So you also factor that in. Each one of them probably get earned what, $5,000?
Everything is factored in that price.
Everything is factored in. The internet, the water, electricity. And so you go. But anyway.
Yeah.
Look, Hamon, I know a fashion show. I hope you know that a fashion show is literally a walking advertisement scenario.
Yeah. I planned that last year. Was that, December. You know, chicken dragged me to one. So
yeah.
I didn't want to go, but I enjoyed it, especially the summer outfit. That was awesome.
But when you got there, the presenters or the organizers said this thing happens every year, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the thing about a fashion show is it is an event that happens at a predictable time and it becomes like a mainstay event to show you what is going to come in the new season.
Yeah.
Because that's how everyone follows the European and American example of fashion shows. The downside is that kimono situation with Kenyan textiles in Osaka. Was it in Osaka or in the other town?
That's the one that was in Osaka.
In Osaka. Yeah. That fashion show itself should now obviously become a mainstay. Meaning every year they've got to bring in new designs, new shapes, models that are obviously modeling it, and it becomes like a whole particular economic, because a fashion show in its own right is an economic event. It's like an expo that you go to here in Namibia or a trade show here in Namibia. For example, with the trade show that's currently happening now there in Ongwediva, the annual trade fair there. It's a regular annual event. It's an economic activity. I'll bet you now, Helmut, 10 cents. That's how low my enthusiasm is about this.
I know.
This was just to show what could be done. It's a once-off. It won't come back next year. That's as long as you and I remember about this particular bet as well, obviously. Obviously. But you won't see this fashion show come back next year.
So every year we are presenting, you know, different things that we can do, you know, that we can do for each other as a partnership. Which is
a fashion show?
Not the fashion show. One thing I was able to find also in the, you know, the first one, the one that took place at the University of Hiroshima.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the academic discussion one where they were talking about, you know, student exchange programs and stuff.
Yeah.
They pointed out something about, just make sure that I have, yeah. The University of Japan, the university's Japan-Africa Triangle Education Program is a unique and innovative student exchange program involving, listen to this, Egypt, Zambia, and Malawi. Now, what? It's still Africa. What's wrong with you? Now,
I don't know why they always just go for three and three and threes.
No. Just listen. There's a spice coming up.
Mm.
Despite the challenges posed by the pandemic COVID-19, the program successfully sent 50 students from Japan to northern and southern African countries for an in-person exchanges.
Yeah.
Now, student exchange programs is a very good thing. This is a very good thing, especially when it comes to cultural exchange between two different countries that have long-term economic or developmental or diplomatic goals.
Yeah.
It's a very good thing to do. The thing though is that, I think dealing with Africa at this point, especially for, for a country, because you have to understand that you are dealing with 1.something billion people.
Yeah.
Yeah, with 50 plus states, most of which have a lot of economic instabilities. Mm. And not just economic instability, some are just flat out, in the middle of, if you got in there to sort of like try to directly establish diplomatic or economic ties with them, you'd be blown off by an IED. Because now, when you look at it, now when you look at it from that, you ask yourself one question. It brings us back to, embassies now. Diplomats, Namibia's representative, Namibia's representative to Japan, Botswana's representative to Japan, South Africa's representative to Japan, Angola's representative to Japan. What are the, it would be very interesting to look at, to hear what their take is on this. What role are they playing to bring Namibians and Japanese together? Like, what common ground can they have with regards to this? Commercial break.
It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
Welcome back. It's 30 minutes to the hour of 6. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And before we continue, let's take a live read.
Felvitje University, with new short courses that are available. Faculty of Law, Commerce and Education, School of Science, Program Years, Certificate in Workplace Dispute Resolution. Admission requirements are Grade 12 Senior Certificate or an equivalent NQF Level 4 with a minimum of 18 points in 5 best subjects and a D symbol in English. Or a Grade 11 Certificate with a minimum of 22 points in 5 subjects and a D symbol in English. Plus a 2 years relevant industry experience that would be required. The course cost is 5,500 Namibian dollars. Application period is from 1 August to 31 August 2025. For more information, call 061-225-463 or 061-225-462 or email admissions@wu.edu.na. Velvita University, where everyone is an achiever.
Welcome back. Let's continue. Now, there's something now, in the Prime Minister's speech, he's sort of like a low key, was threatening my job, the comedy one.
Why?
When he said, integrating the formal sector. He was talking about integrating the formal sector the informal sector into mainstream economy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he says, leaving this important sector behind will only give us half cooked meals. I'm like, nice. Look. The man has a point.
He does.
Yeah, the man has a point. Because, how do you call this? Small-scale businesses, if I can use that term. Small-scale businesses, it's a big part of Japan's economic culture.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is, that's where now that, the hierarchy of things to consider you know, the way that it's, you know, it's, it was pushed during the, is it the Marshall Plan?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, how developing all these countries that participated in all these, you know, region wide kabooms. Now, here's the thing.
Ahmed, why must I interpret? Why am I sitting here interpreting your special effects?
I know. Region wide kabooms. I know. Now, back in 20, yeah, I remember, was that, back in 2020, yeah, back in 2012, I only found this article, last week when I came across a video on social media of someone talking about it. So I decided, you know what, let me just see if I can find, you know, any source, whether in now or in the past, where this was talked about. Adult adoptions keeping Japan's family firms alive. And it's no secret at this point that, in some parts of Japan, they will basically have to close down schools because they are not in, you know, they don't have a young enough population. They're not replenishing themselves fast enough for those schools to remain open. They have an, you know, they have any, they have a population crisis.
Yeah.
And that's not Japan, that's not just Japan. That's basically across the developed world. That's it. Yeah. You know, they're having that problem. Now, here's the thing. The reason is, now for some families, as it was reported as far back as 2012, that some families have resorted to adopting 20-year-olds. In the world of adoption, you are only supposed to adopt minors. You can't adopt anyone over the age of 18. So they resorted, and that, now the BBC wrote a whole, you know, the whole article on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where they pointed out, that, some families have decided basically to resort to adopting people that are in their 20s so that they, because they don't have heirs to take over the business.
I know, Helmut.
Now, the reason why I'm pointing that out is because, I'm not sure if it was, when you were on leave or not, because when I was talking about, you know, the formalization of the informal businesses to contribute overall to the, you know, to the Namibian economy.
Yeah.
Now, what we are looking at here is, we are looking at, you know, we are in partnership with Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, what we are basically, you know, when we look at developed countries like Japan, it's very understandable for us to look at Japan and just admire the technology and sort of like you know turn a blind eye on the economic issues that they are having.
Mm.
They need a future workforce.
Mm.
Without it, there is no amount of technology that can get you out of it.
It doesn't mean that they will, let's say, have a limited visa, working visa situation like Japan has. Like Germany has. Because Germany says, mm-hmm. as long as you've got a skill that we want for
yeah.
the jobs that we have,
mm-hmm.
you can come. Yes, Helmut, come.
Yes. Well, now, thank you.
Not Helmut the comedian.
No.
Yes, Helmut, probably the law graduate.
Now, here's the thing.
Yeah.
Here is where I think, I really like the fact that we are having, you know, we are having this type of collabos on a diplomatic level.
Yeah.
Because, one thing that you see here is that, Europe is one of those easy examples that you can use when you look at sort of like solving that problem that way. But, what that ends up is, now you have to deal with conservative guys.
Mm.
Those ones that talk about, oh, you know what, they're just here to, to erase every white guy off the planet of, you know, of the earth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, because if I'm going to work, take for example, for 10 years in Europe, chances are very high I'm going to make, I'm going to make European friends or maybe, you know, make European kids.
Or you meet another immigrant.
Nigerian.
The child will be European.
The mother is from Nigeria. The father is from Namibia.
Yeah.
The baby is born in Germany.
Yeah.
Now, let's visit the grandparents now, shall we?
Yeah.
And
both, you know, one comes from, what's that tribe's name in Nigeria?
Igbo.
Why did you go for Igbo?
I have no idea.
Are they the pretty ones? Are they the Muslim ones?
I don't know about all
anyway,
that Lizzie just said.
Yeah.
Now you have to understand that most of my understanding of what's going on in Nigeria
yeah.
is coming from Akina Ukwa 4.
Who's Akwena?
You don't watch Nigerian movies, do you?
No, I don't. Now, because I don't want to sit there interpreting what English is being spoken.
Why
are you running?
No, you get the hang of it. You get the hang of it.
And then they ask you, why are you running?
Easy. You know, all you just need is watch 5 movies and you'll understand everything. The vocabularies are very pretty Lamella, basic. Yeah. Yeah. Pekin means baby. Bele means pregnant. Okay. Now, so.
Yeah, you really went into that movie situation.
Deep. Like, really deep.
Yeah.
So, now, the thing is, that's the part where I'm saying that we have to look at this in a diplomatic way. I think, actually, thank you for making that point. I think it's one of those things that we have in abundance that we can contribute to this partnership. We have one of the biggest youth workforce.
Yeah.
Now, that is where I think it's important for this university exchange programs.
Yeah.
Because, Japan is on the top 5 of the most difficult languages to learn. So that means if you are going to, you know, early exposure when it comes to any language is just the best.
Here's the other thing, Amu. Africa's biggest trade partner is Europe. Japan's biggest trade partners are China, Korea, parts of Asia, and the US.
Yeah.
And then obviously comes Europe as well. Japan does have such a worker scenario, sourcing workers for certain industries that they source from the likes of Thailand and so on. In Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
Hence the reason why I stopped there and told you.
Now, Asia, it seems to be because, US big tech source them a lot.
I know, yeah. Because the downside is if any African youth or any Namibian youth would be now thinking, oh wow, maybe maybe I can go and work in Japan. Not really. Because
culture.
Not just the culture scenario.
It's
also what they want you. To have beforehand. Namibia is not listed as a country that can speak high levels of good English, which is false.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously our prime minister would have showcased that himself because English is the national medium. They only recognize
country. That is our official language.
Yeah, it's our official language. And only countries that were extensively considered as having indigenous English speakers like South Africa, New Zealand, Australia, the US, Canada would be recognized. So if you even think that you probably would stand a chance of working in Japan, they would first consider. There's a list that they share. I don't know where they get this list or where it comes from, but there's a list that they stipulate.
Yeah.
You should be from these countries. Now comes the next scenario, Helmut. I already showcased to you that Japan already has that labor force agreements with countries in Southeast Asia to get workers in for certain jobs in its country. The thing of the adoption thing that you mentioned there is a cultural practice that the Japanese practice.
Adopting majors? That's an interesting culture.
No, Helmut, it comes from... It is in Japanese culture. Helmut, if you go back to the samurai period in Japan, if you were from a lesser samurai family, I mean lesser in terms of you probably didn't have the standing that your wife's family has. Let's say your wife's family, your father-in-law to be is a daimyo. A daimyo is, he's a lord.
High-ranking official.
No, he's a lord. He's a feudal lord. He's like a duke. He's like a count, an earl. But the name they had is just daimyo. If your wife's father is a daimyo, he's a samurai from a higher ranking position in society. You're a samurai from a lower ranking position. Let's say you, because the word samurai means to serve. Now, anyone can be a samurai, but it's just a scenario of, you know, what was your birth, your lineage like?
Where were you born?
Yeah. Or who were your parents? What was your lineage like?
Dear.
Now, if you're a samurai from a lower standing in society, The moment you marry a woman from a samurai position in a higher standing in society, you have to take her name.
Come again.
You take her name. Let's say if her surname was now Watson, Helmut, your name is Watson. There is no, your wife's is taking Mahongoro.
I'd have gone with an Angolo, but anyway.
Well, what's your surname again?
Mahongo.
Mahongo. Yeah. There is no, your wife is taking Mahongo.
Uh-huh.
You are taking Watson. You're taking your wife's name.
Mr. Watson.
You become Watson. Awesome. Do you know why?
Mm-hmm.
You get immediately adopted.
Adopted?
Yep. You get immediately adopted through marriage.
Adoption through marriage. Ooh.
In that sense, you then obviously play a particular strategic role back then, obviously. In that
so sense. You also become an heir to all the...
No, not you.
Yeah.
The children born between you and your wife.
Not you, never. You.
The child from you and your wife.
Oh, dear.
Not you.
Mm-hmm.
The children to come. But they ensure the surname is still, Watson.
So in other words,
the surname is not Mahongo.
In other words, when you're getting that agreement, cross your fingers, pray to every deity and hope you are not shooting blanks. Because, because surname gone.
Oh my goodness. So, yeah. The scenario was a weird one.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got an ad break coming up.
Yeah.
So just after this, dear listeners, we'll be back right after the ad break.
That iconic taste of Heineken. Loved in Germany, Amsterdam, Argentina, and Namibia. That crisp and balanced taste of Heineken. Loved around the world. Enjoy that refreshing thirst. Ah, only made possible by Heineken's unique 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
With either a non-alcoholic Heineken, Savannah, Vintook Original, or Vintook Lemon. Let's cheers to connecting. To moments shared and good vibes. Anytime, anywhere. Grab one of our great tasting non-alcoholic beers or ciders. Easy to connect. Easy to enjoy. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Welcome back. We have 14 minutes before the hour of 6. Yeah. So you were saying.
So if when you mentioned the adoption thing, the story that the BBC wrote,
yeah.
I know that the BBC guys or the in many cases the Western media, they try to paint a picture of exoticism being that, oh wow, look at this weird thing happening in Japan. But I just told you this is something that's been happening for 600 years.
No, more often when these guys are writing,
it's like it's new. Wow.
No, usually when I find something, something about China, I know I have to read it, or Russia, I know I have to read it with a pinch of salt. Yeah, but, and this basically goes for both. Yeah, it's, those guys have a lot of diplomatic, especially in their respective medias.
Yeah. No, the propaganda war is.
It's fierce. Yeah, it's fierce. Yeah. So, for me, the whole diplomacy is an interesting one.
Yeah.
And, the joint vision 2030, and thank you for that cultural clarification, by the way. I didn't know that. Take for example the Africa, African Union, European Union, joint vision 2030, for example. It's fascinating to look at this and go like, there's a conversation we're not having here.
Mm.
And that is, vision 2030, joint Africa, Europe. You do realize the people on the ground, they have a lot of anti-immigration sentiment. Like, how do we go past that? Because if we are going to build infrastructure that's not going to be set on fire, we have to make sure that the people on the ground are in good atmosphere.
Do you know what I saw in a Namibian context? Now, obviously, this is the Namibian government's biggest headache, Helmut. I have nothing against gravel roads. Absolutely nothing. The downside is what I saw now, obviously, you know, with this particular cultural tourism, if I can call it excursion, because my goodness, I was tired, exhausted.
Still because of gravel road.
Not because of gravel road. It's the getting off driving, recording, getting off driving, recording, getting off driving, recording. But anyway, what I've seen, for example, in the north itself has a unique, issue. It's not a big problem. It's not a major problem. You know, it's just a unique issue. If you now look at how Namibia wants to position its particular developmental, pathway.
Yeah.
For example, Helmut, what would help with the layout specifically for many parts there in the north is that I recognize when everyone says from the village, they're literally talking of like your homestead, ne, which is a football field and a half in size. Sits next to my homestead, which is a football field and a half. And then imagine that now being repeated like 10 times on both sides of the road. Then you get to understand why a place, for example, like Helau Nafiti looks like you are just flying through it. But then you see all these homesteads which are literally like right next to the town limits. And then you ask yourself the particular question of, okay, so how am I bringing services to people out there? If service provision needs to start from the administrative capital or the closest urban area, for example, like Ondangwa, has to start heading into the rest of the region.
Because of the not very close proximity.
Yeah. Bruh. Do you know, I didn't even care in terms of how to navigate because everything was based upon stop the car here and ask Helmut who's walking there next to the side of the road. Helmut, do you know where so-and-so and this? No, it's that palm tree. You see that twin palm tree over there? Now, the palm tree behind the twin palm trees, you'll find a catchment dam over there. So look for a goat that looks like he's on his way to becoming an albino, but he's not fully. That's the goat that you turn off there, and then you'll find that guy's homestead. That's what went on for 4 days of last week. That's how directions went.
Jeez.
Look, there's nothing wrong with it. I know, that's the directions I grew up with in the rivers. Yeah, go look for the pink house, you get in that street, you find five pink houses. Whose pink house is it? I know those kinds of directions.
Yeah.
Vintuk teaches you a different scenario about street names, true geographic locations, and, you know, you can navigate yourself in terms of finding your, you know, the way to something. That's why I said it's an issue, it's not a problem. If you look at that scenario for Namibia, that is a characteristic that is unique to Namibia. So, on the ground, for the local authority, the regional authority, and whoever, their biggest issue would be like, let's try and get things, you know, like small development things, like a pavement here with a storm drain over there, so to avoid the washing away of the road, you know. Safety for the pedestrians that they have a pavement next to these gravel roads. Yes, you can put a pavement next to a gravel road, guys. Things like that, you know, unique things like that. Or building canalways. Do you know what? It's a Helmut. Those stories that people have told us here on air about, you know, when that floods, that rainwater that flows in from Angola, when it flows in. But I've looked at that geography. I was like, these guys are not joking. This place is flat. This place is flat! Flat! Helmut, when we got to Odibo, do you know how flat it gets there? It gets... Okay, not at Odibo itself, guys. I know I'm slightly exaggerating, but in terms of the flatness flowing in from Angola, I could understand. Because there is a river situation, catchment dam situations there that they constructed for the school at Odibo, the Anglican mission and school and the hospital. I understand that, you know, what happened there. The downside is, any engineer would have come and told you what they did in Europe. Because Europe also had the same scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Flatness, rainwater, falling, you've got a lot of surface water standing about.
Mm-hmm.
What did they do in Europe? They built all these man-made canals.
To channel the water.
To channel the water. Hmm. Man-made canals to channel the water, to ensure safety to livestock, infrastructure, human lives, and other infrastructure affiliated to this. All I could see was, yeah, build canals. Not canals to transport water from the Kuvalai water scenario.
To redirect it.
To collect rainfall, surface water from rainfall, and channel it throughout the whole of the north. There where you've got irrigation, wish to have irrigation schemes and the law. Work with that scenario.
Now, let's get back to, bring you back to the point you made about, the scattered homesteads. Now, that's one interesting thing that I think it's, is going to bring us to this, is going to bring us to this whole, ticker discussion.
Yes.
Because, now, if you look at it, when it comes to a lot of things social, we have a lot of Western influence.
Of course.
Yeah. Now, here's the thing. Now, the whole scattered living is very African.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we didn't have to, we didn't have to deal with services like plumbing system,
or sanitation.
Or things like that.
Yeah.
For the most part, when you look at urbanized Africa, like, Carthage among a lot of other civilization, because we had urban areas, a lot. But for the most part, we had a lot of, more like, village setup type of living style. So you didn't have to worry about, how do you connect a sewer pipe, from one house to another, to make sure that you don't have, you don't have to deal with the financial nightmare of having to dedicate a whole plumbing system for each and every single household. That's unfeasible. Now, we live in the, of course we have adopted the Western way of doing things. Mm. Now it's more of, clashing with our African way of doing things. The Western way, more like a very convenient one that we want to adopt, or more like we have adopted basically, is more of what you see in urban areas.
Yeah.
Where you see the local authorities or municipal areas telling you that,
and the condensation.
Exactly. Or... for me to provide you all these services, getting off refuse or bringing you all this water and electricity, for example, you must be in close proximity with each other.
Yeah.
Because if you are scattered, I will need more money.
Yeah.
To buy all the pipings and all the cabling for me to provide all the electricity. And we don't want that.
Yeah.
And frankly, we don't have the budget.
Yeah. You are right, Helmut. Do you know what's the obvious, what's the other part? In the European scenario, let's for example say take Windhoek, which is the European context. Windhoek is condensed.
Yeah.
Meaning it's a lot of people in a small area, right? And around it, you've obviously got the designated rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
So Windhoek is the designated urban. Outside of it's the designated rural. Now, Japan would, for example, in that scenario, under the TCAT situation, would recognize, okay, so Namibia, you don't have much issues. You're not struggling with your own systems and getting things done, because our prime minister outlined what our needs were. Specifically, let's ensure that we've got tourism flourishing. Let's ensure that we make use of the blue economy to the best of our ability to improve on agri food processing initiatives. I mean, that was one of the issues. For example, empty facilities.
Yep.
That were built and constructed with government money. And then ultimately ensuring that there is mass benefit for as many Namibians as possible through Namibia's critical minerals or materials that are excavated out of the country. So he outlined it in those points. The downside is here, Helmut. The only way you can do that, and this is one of the reasons why I can see we are once again probably trying to emphasize mining again, is that unless you have the factory that refines the thing and makes the part in Namibia, here in Namibia, only then will we see the true benefit, the true minerals benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Because you will still have the sorting taking place, and here in Namibia, the sorting will take place, probably a little bit of crushing, probably a little of other particular aspects as affiliated to just, you know, a little bit of cleaning or value addition, and then the thing will just zoop, ship out of the country. Either that scenario will persist, because the biggest economy that's buying all of these things is unfortunately the Chinese economy. It will then become the Indian economy after that. And then what do we want to say to the Indians? No, come open up your factories here. And then we didn't say it to the Chinese partners, development partners we have in our country already. And then what messaging are we giving? Do you understand? So we go tell a country that's number three or number four in the world in terms of economic size. We could tell a country like that, we wish to see more beneficiation.
Here's another problem though.
The one country, ne, that's the second largest investor in the United States, in the world's largest economy. We go tell them we want more minerals beneficiation.
Minerals beneficiation. Let's just, let's say humor that for now, shall we? In the report of the EU-AU joint vision for 2030 that he shared.
Yeah.
One thing that, there's one point that was, that's number four. Yeah. One of the pillars that was agreed upon for that, collabo back in 2022 was a prosperous and sustainable Africa and Europe.
Mm.
Now, listen to one of my favorite jokes coming out of this document. We announced this is in 2022, yeah. We announced an African Union investment package of at least $150 billion that will support our common ambition for 2030 and AU Agenda 2063, which is...
I already told you what that money is from, Helmut.
Where is it from?
It's the Global Gateway Commitment.
Exactly.
The $300 billion for the Samoa Agreement.
Now, my favorite part is when they were looking at this, right? And the report that you shared was compiled based on this. These were plans that were made in 2022, and the report was that's why actually we love reports, because reports are based on what? It's basically giving us an update of, with regards to EU-AU joint vision 2030 and Agenda 2063, that's for Africa. Okay, so let's just pretend like we didn't have silencing of the gun for 2021. Now
we can ignore that.
Yeah, we can just ignore that one. Now the problem that we have here is that, when some of the accomplishments were sort of like pointed out with regards to the EU-AU joint vision 2030. One of the things that the report kept pointing on as to some of the as the progress that had been made was the Lobito Corridor. Now, what is the Lobito Corridor mostly going to transport?
Raw materials.
Exactly. Now you are telling someone that, you know what, come to our continent and let's work on value addition. On things that we are shipping out raw, like, really?
Which
you see the contradiction here.
We're already doing it without a headache. You know, we don't even develop headaches anymore.
Yeah, as of now, we're building infrastructure that will ship it out, but you can come and help us, add value. At this point, I'm going, are you selling or buying?
Well, besides the selling or buying, Helmut, it's a scenario of
It's a scenario.
It's a scenario of where can you quickly position something that ultimately gets you closer to a market. And now if you know where the market is, and the market is not in Namibia, obviously the thing will still flow outside.
Now, which is why the question I kept asking myself when I was reading through that report, especially in also looking at the whole ticket collab, was, are we processing these raw materials or we are selling them like that? Because, or we are going to have a transition period.
Oh, our only smelting and processing plant or facility. It's must now Chinese owned.
Mm-hmm.
So
now, when it comes to value addition, we are doing great. Yeah, and by that I mean terribly.
Yeah, we're doing great by selling the things off that are supposed to stay locally.
Agenda 2063, we are going to process this and then, you know, just sell it.
Yeah.
So today's home run is somewhat of a special one. And now to explain that, HD, go.
Yes, it's going to be a collab of our program coming up, Financially Included, Where Money Meets Access. In a few moments, we're going to be in touch with Ocha from FNB. Uh-huh. He's going to talk to us about the wonderful FNB Cash Plus service, which, he'll explain in more detail. Ocha Muroko, he's an alternative channel product analyst at FNB Namibia, and we're going to be in touch with him soon. He's going to talk to us about the Cash Plus service, going to talk to us about financial inclusion. And, it's going to be a good conversation with him. So you two gentlemen will join me for that conversation in a few moments. And that's what we have today.
Yeah, we've been strong-armed into this, dear listeners, so that you know. But we'll be continuing, yeah.
Yeah, and you can, we have a caller right there coming in.
We do?
Yes. No.
Eagle FM, good. Is it morning or evening?
Afternoon.
Blessed day. You can pick up a telephone this time.
Uncle Bona, how are you doing, Uncle Bona?
Oh my God! Hey, good afternoon, man. Is it evening or afternoon?
It's almost evening, Uncle Bona. Yeah.
Where are you facing this night? That you can pick up the call this time.
No, it's not me pressing the button, Agapona. But yeah, we saw the line flashing.
It was a mistake. So what? I was wondering.
Yeah, I was just stretching, and then the next thing you know, hello.
I think today is so special.
Uh-huh.
So that means there will be interaction.
Mm-hmm.
You can ask, Uncle Bona. You can ask.
Teacher, learn our standard education.
Yeah.
Why do you always say our education system quality, what, but you could produce it?
Yeah.
And the one that we know, I am going to give you a chance now so that you can interact. You say it's a special program. I just wanted to say, these guys, whenever they come here, they bra-bra-bra-bra-bra, off they go.
Is that a new vocabulary?
Uh-huh. Dwight will explain.
Okay. You're grilling us again,
Sting of calling with Tamba also.
Was that us? Or was it Uncle Bona?
No, that was TK, which is why I'm making fun of him. So now we switch into our special program for today. That's financial inclusion.
We'll be back right after this break, guys.
Yeah.
You are now tuned into Financially Included, where money meets access. Proudly brought to you by FNB Namibia.
Yes, welcome to Financially Included, brought to you by none other than our good friends at FNB Namibia. And as promised, we're going to have an interview with a great gentleman from FNB Namibia, the alternative channel product analyst, Ocha Muroko. He's going to join us in just a few moments to talk about FNB Cash Plus, talk about how that has fostered financial inclusion. And of course, don't forget, this is in lead up to the Global Policy Forum that Namibia is hosting for the very first time in Swakopmund from the 2nd to the 5th of September. Gentlemen, before we get to the interview with with Ocha, I want to ask the two of you, what does financial inclusion mean to you guys?
Albert, you can start. You can definitely start, Albert.
Financial inclusion, this is just thumbthacking. I will explain where that term is from later. But that to me is, you know, when you look at financial institutions, right, they offer services.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at these services, they do to the basically like every business find the best ways to offer their clients the best service they can.
Mm-hmm.
And with the advancement of technology, I think this to some degree, you know, I think this takes me to what I talked about last week.
Mm-hmm.
One of the issues that the new ways of financial transactions, especially the technological one, that's being encountered by a lot of especially developing countries, is how to include everyone in these services. Because then it comes to take for example the electronic ones. For example, you need a phone. If mm-hmm. you don't have one, mm-hmm. you are excluded.
Yeah.
So you need to have, more like, I think it's to some degree a part of infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You need the technological physical devices that enables you, connects you to more like, the zeros and ones version for you to access it, like take e-wallets and e-wallets, mm-hmm. Services like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The inclusion then for me would come in at how do we ensure that, everyone accesses these services, even those ones that don't have access to the services because of, they don't have the devices, for example.
Yeah. Precisely.
On my side, it's actually, we have spoken about these things before, Helmut, but not in the same terminology.
Mm-hmm.
So remember, if you look at the malnutrition discussion Helmut and I spoke about, it was access to money to get to the shops, because you could debate malnutrition.
We have enough food.
We have enough food.
It's not the food.
But
we don't
most of the food is concentrated within within retail outlets, food retail outlets.
Yeah.
And food retail outlets, like the theory that I'm running with, is that if you want to see true development in your area where you are,
yeah,
you will always see a food retailer open up a shop in your community, because they're bringing you so many other things than just the food. And you can think of it in the same sense of getting access to money to access that food retailer, because you want is to make the money move. Obviously, in part answering your question of what is financial inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in many parts, I quickly looked at the Bank of Namibia's own particular explainer on financial inclusion, but they cited something like, leveraging, technology present here. You need to look at rural urban demographics. You need to look at other things. So, in a nutshell, it's the aspect of making the money move.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to have certain things present through which you, as many people, can access said particular money. So I'm just going in that more broad-based explainer so that people can understand it's an access and it's an accessibility discussion.
100%. And without wasting too much more time, on the other side of this, we'll get in touch with our guest, Mr. Ocha Muroko, as I said, alternative channel product analyst at FNB Namibia. We will be back right on the other side of this.